Thank you, Amukta. Allow me to serve you and the devotees. First, we're going to be reading from Srila Prabhupada Vaitamrita, Volume 3. Only he could read them in St. Eric, San Francisco, India, 1967. And then we'll go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. This chapter is entitled Swami Invites the Hippies. Steve Bowler, age 20, born and raised in New York and now living the hippie life in San Francisco, had read in the Oracle about Swami Bhaktivedanta's coming to San Francisco. The idea of meeting an Indian Swami had interested him, and responding to a notice he had seen posted on 8th Street, he had gone along with Carolyn Gold, the woman he was living with, to the airport to meet Swami Bhaktivedanta. He and Carolyn had both gotten a blissful lift by chanting Hare Krishna and seeing Prabhupada, and they began regularly attending the lectures and kirtans at the temple. Steve decided he wanted to become like the Swami, so he and Carolyn went together to see Prabhupada and request initiation. Speaking privately with Prabhupada in his room, they discussed obedience to the spiritual master and becoming vegetarian. When Prabhupada told them that they should either stop living together or get married, they said they would like to get married. An initiation date was set. Prabhupada asked Steve to shave his long hair and beard. "Why do you want me to shave my head?" Steve protested. "Krishna had long hair and Rama had long hair. Lord Chaitanya had long hair and Christ had long hair. Why should I shave my head?" Prabhupada smiled and replied, "Because now you are following me." There was a print on the wall of Surodas, a Vaishnava. "You should shave your head like that," Prabhupada said, pointing to Surodas. "I don't think I'm ready to do that yet," Steve said. "All right, you are still a young man. There is still time. But at least you should shave your face clean and cut your hair like a man." On the morning of the initiation, Steve shaved off his beard and cut his hair around his ears so that it was short in front, but long in the back. "How's this?" he asked. "You should cut the back also," Prabhupada replied. Steve agreed. To Steve, Prabhupada gave the name Subal, and to Carolyn, the name Krishna Devi. A few days later, he performed their wedding. Since each ceremony was another occasion for kirtan and prasadam distribution, onlookers became attracted. And as the spiritual names and married couples increased with each ceremony, Prabhupada's spiritual family grew. The harmonious atmosphere was like that of a small, loving family, and Prabhupada dealt with his disciples intimately, without the formalities of an institution or hierarchy. Disciples would approach him for various reasons, entering the little apartment to be alone with him as he sat on a mat before his makeshift desk in the morning sunlight. With men like Mukunda, Guru Das, and Shamashunda, Swamiji was a friend. With Janaki and Govinda Dasi, he was sometimes ready to be chided, almost like their naughty son. Or he would be their grandfatherly teaching of cooking, the enforcer of the rules of kitchen cleanliness. And to all of them, he was the unfathomable pure devotee of Lord Krishna, who knew the conclusions of all the Vedic scriptures, and he knew beyond all doubts the truth of transmigration. He could answer all questions. He could lead them beyond material life, beyond hate, aspiration, and into the spiritual world of Krishna. As I was reading about his relationship with Janaki and Govinda Dasi, I also thought about Yamuna. And I remember when she was telling some of the memories of the pastimes with Srila Prabhupada, I think her sister...
Janaki's wedding.
Yeah, but who was her sister? She came for Janaki's wedding, right. So she came to cook. Prabhupada asked her to help cook the feast. And she was in the kitchen, and every time she did something like wipe her head or wipe, whatever she did, Prabhupada would say, go wash your hands. And then she would do something else, and Prabhupada would say, go wash your hands. You know, so in that way, he was instilling in her, you know.
She also asked if she could go and smoke and come back.
Yeah, and he told her, wash your hands. You know, but you can see how merciful he was, because he knew where they were at that time. You know, but still, gently, he was trying to bring them along. Okay, the next paragraph. It was 7 p.m. Srila Prabhupada entered the temple dressed in a saffron dhoti, an old turtleneck jersey under a cardigan sweater and a cheddar around his shoulders. Walking to the dais in the rear of the room, he took his seat. The dais, a cushion atop a redwood plank 2 feet off the floor, was supported between 2 redwood columns. In front of the dais stood a cloth-covered lectern with a bucket of cut flowers on either side. Covering the wall behind the dais was a typical Indian madras, with Haridasa's crude painting of Lord Chaitanya in kirtan hanging against it. Srila Prabhupada picked up his cartels, wrapped the cloth straps around his forefingers, and looked out at his young followers sitting cross-legged on the burgundy rug. The men were bearded, and almost everyone wore long hair. Beads, exotic clothing, and trinkets. The bulbs hanging from the ceiling diffused their light through Japanese paper lanterns, and Navajo God's Eye symbols dangled from strings. Prabhupada began the ringing, 1, 2, 3 rhythm, and Sharma Shunda began pumping the harmonium. Although the harmonium was a simple instrument, a miniature piano keyboard to be played with the right hand, and a bellows to be pumped with the left hand, no one in the Frederick Street storefront knew how to play it. So it simply became the drone. Another important kirtan instrument, the two-headed mridanga from India, was meant for intricate rhythmic accompaniments, but even Mukunda could play it only very simply, matching the 1, 2, 3 of Prabhupada's kartals. There were other instruments on hand, a kettle drum, the pride of the temple, Hari Griva's old cornet, a few conch shells, and a horn Hari Griva had made by shellacking a piece of kelp he had found on the beach. Some guests had brought their own flutes, pipes, and bongos, but for now they let the instruments remain still and clapped to Prabhupada's rhythm as he sang the evening prayers. Prabhupada's Sanskrit hymn praised the Vaishnava spiritual masters for each great devotee in the disciplic succession. He sang a specific prayer. First, he chanted the poetic descriptions of the transcendental qualities of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, then Gaura Kishore Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one after another. One prayer described Srila Bhaktisiddhanta as the deliverer of the fallen souls, and another praised Gaura Kishore Das Babaji as renunciation personified, always merged in the feeling of separation and intense love for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada sang of Lord Chaitanya, the golden complexioned supreme personality of Godhead, who distributed pure love of Krishna. And he sang of Lord Krishna, the ocean of mercy, the friend of the distressed, the source of creation. As Prabhupada became absorbed in the bhajan, his body trembled with ecstatic emotion. The group on the floor sat swaying from side to side, watching him, his eyes closed in meditation, his delicate, practiced fingers expertly playing cymbals. They heard the heartfelt minor moods and tones of his voice, unlike anything they had heard before. Then he began the familiar mantra they had come to hear, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama,
Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And immediately they joined him. The horns and drums sounded, and soon all the other instrument players joined in. Gradually, a few at a time, members of the audience rose to their feet and began to dance. Prabhupada's followers stood and began stepping from side to side as he had shown them, sometimes raising their hands in the air. Others moved as they pleased. Occasionally, opening his eyes and glancing around, Prabhupada sat firmly, chanting, though his head and body were trembling. After 20 minutes, many of the young dancers were leaping, jumping, and perspiring as Prabhupada continued to sing, leading the dancers by the beat of the cartels. His eyes were closed, yet he controlled the entire wild congregation, playing his cartels loudly. The chanting and dancing continued, and Prabhupada approved. So I'll read one more paragraph. The kirtan of these hippies was different from the chanting of Indian brahmanas, but Prabhupada didn't mind. His standard was devotion. In his Radha Krishna temple, whatever he accepted, Krishna accepted. This was his offering to Krishna through his spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada was absolutely confident. Even if his young devotees didn't know how to play the harmonium keyboard or the madanga, even if they didn't know that congregational kirtan should be done not in constant unison, as they were doing, but responsibly, and even if they didn't know how to honor the guru, still, because they were chanting and dancing, he encouraged them and nodded to them, yes. Nayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devam sasvitvadim vyasam tato jayam udhirayat nasta paiso bhadresu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama sloke bhakti bhavati naistiki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, entitled Talks Between Narada and King Parsinibarhi, Text 34. Naikanta ta pratikara.
Naikanta pratikara.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Vayam
hi avidyopashritam. Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Vayam hi avidyopashritam. Shritam.
Vayam hi avidyopashritam.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Vayam hi avidyopashritam.
Vayam hi avidyopashritam.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Naikanta ta pratikara.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Karmanam karma kevalam.
Dvayam hi
avidyopashritam.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Swapne swapna ivanaga.
Naikanta
naikantata pratikara karmanam karma kevalam maya vidya vidyopashritam svapne svapna ivanaka naikantata pratikara karmanam karma kevalam dvayam hi avidyopashritam svapne svapna ivanaga naikantata pratikara karmanam karma kevalam dvayam hi avidyopashritam svapne svapna ivanaga naikantata pratikara
naikantata pratikara
karmanam karma kevalam
karmanam karma kevalam
dvayam hi avidyopashritam
dvayam hi avidyopashritam
svapne svapna ivanaga
svapne svapna ivanaga.
I'm just surprising everybody.
Anyway, I want to ask for the blessings of the senior devotees to offer something, and so I can speak something. So thank you very much for allowing me to give class.
Thank you for giving class.
So repeat word for word.
Na.
Never.
Never.
Ekantata.
Ekantata.
Ultimately. Pratikara.
Pratikara.
Counteraction.
Counteraction.
Karmanam.
Karmanam.
Of different activities.
Of different activities.
Karma.
Karma.
Another activity.
Another activities.
Kevalam.
Kevalam.
Only.
Only.
Dvayam.
Dvayam.
Both.
Both.
He,
because,
avidya,
due to illusion,
upashritam,
accepted,
swapne,
in a dream,
swapna,
a dream,
eva,
like,
anaga,
O you who are free from sinful activities.
Translation and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. Narada continued, O you who are free from all sinful activity, no one can counteract the effects of fruitive activity simply by manufacturing a different activity devoid of Krishna consciousness. All such activity is due to our ignorance. When we have a troublesome dream, we cannot relieve it with a troublesome hallucination. One can counteract a dream only by awaking. Similarly, our material existence is due to ignorance and illusion. Unless we awaken to Krishna consciousness, we cannot be relieved from such dreams. For the ultimate solution to all problems, we must awaken to Krishna consciousness. So please repeat. Narada continued.
Narada continued.
O you who are free from all sinful activity.
O you free from all sinful activities.
No one can counteract the effects.
No one can counteract the effects
of fruitive activities.
Of fruitive activities.
Simply by manufacturing.
Simply by manufacturing.
A different activity.
A different activities.
Devoid of Krishna consciousness.
Devoid of Krishna consciousness.
All such activity is due to our ignorance.
All such activity is due to our ignorance.
When we have a troublesome dream, we cannot relieve it with a troublesome hallucination.
We cannot relieve it with troublesome hallucination.
One can counteract a dream only by awaking.
One can counteract a dream only by awakening.
Similarly,
our material existence
is due to our ignorance and illusion. Unless we awaken to Krishna consciousness,
we cannot be relieved of such dreams.
For the ultimate solution to all problems.
For the ultimate solution to all problems.
We must awaken to Krishna consciousness.
We must awaken to Krishna consciousness.
Purport. There are two kinds of fruitive activity. We can place the burden on the head, or we can place it on the shoulder. Actually, keeping the burden in either place is the same. The transferal, however, is taking place under the name of counteraction. In this connection, Prahlad Maharaj said that fools and rascals in the material world plan so gorgeously for bodily comfort without knowing that such arrangements, even if successful, are only maya. People are working hard day and night for the illusory happiness of the body. This is not a way to achieve happiness. One has to get out of this material entanglement and return home back to Godhead. That is real happiness. The Vedas therefore enjoin, don't remain in the darkness of this material world. Go to the light of the spiritual world. To counteract the distress of this material body, one has to take on another distressed condition. Both situations are only illusion. There is no gain in taking on one trouble to counteract another trouble. The conclusion is that one cannot be perfectly happy as long as one exists in this material world. The only remedy is to get out of this material world altogether and return home back to Godhead. Om Yanata Miranda Shagana Gana Salaka Yanata Swami Shri Gurave Namaha. So as I was reading this, I was actually reviewing my life, because this first sentence, the first couple of sentences, we can place the burden on the head or we can place it on the shoulder. I remember during the time that I was in the material world and not Krishna conscious, I was working very hard trying to maintain. I was a single mother after I was married, but then I became divorced and trying to maintain, you know, the household and my son. But I didn't really like working in the private sector or the corporations, because they demanded so much of you. You just work day and night. You hardly had time for anything. So I thought, okay, I had other talents. I could make things. I could sell them, you know. But then I realized that, that was hard work too. That was like intense hard work, because what I was doing, I was making clothing and doing earrings and going to different places to sell them. And so, you know, just the making of them and going to different places and dragging out the clothes with me and dragging out the duties and setting up. And I was just like, oh, this isn't working either, you know. But there's no choice. As long as you don't have Krishna consciousness, you don't really know what to do. I could see how blind I was to you know, the fact that I was living in an illusion, you know, that I could find some type of comfort and happiness in the material world. And I remember when I first met my guru, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, what I used to say first is, he would always ask us, what was our experience in the material world? What were we doing, and this and that, and why did we come? And I always used to tell him, because I said, I was just thinking, after all of that, I was thinking, what all you do is you used to work and then you die. You know, you just, that those are the only two things I could see, because I didn't see any, my life was very difficult, so I didn't see any happiness at all in that. And then two, thinking about, I was also a political activist. I was always trying to change the world. I was with Greenpeace. I was with the Black Panther Party. I was with the Civil Rights Movement. I was with whatever it was, you name it, because I was thinking, there must be some way to improve this world, to improve the condition of people. You know, and I also worked for Amnesty International. And I thought, well, you know, they're helping, you know, different political situations, so maybe this will work. But what I saw in that organization was the same thing I had been seeing everywhere, even though they were having this particular goal. But still, there were certain things that were going on that didn't quite gel in terms of what their goal was and what they were actually doing, you know. So so I was living in Boston. I lived here actually for 18 years. I lived in Boston for 18 years. I met the devotees on the Commons, on the Boston Commons. I was walking through the Boston Commons and I saw a group of people with, I was thinking, I was trying to avoid them actually. I was like, they looked a little strange, but I was going to pick up my son in daycare and I didn't want to go through. I was looking and I was like, there's nowhere to pass. I had to go through. So I went through and they stopped me, of course. I was relating this to Sue Davy and they gave me a Back to Godhead. And I remember holding the Back to Godhead, but I don't remember reading it. I was, and I just went about my business, but I was holding the magazine. And that was in 1975 or 76. But it took another 10 years before that connection fructified. By that time I had moved to Washington, and that's when I connected with, at that time his name was Srila Krishnapada. That was when I was working at Amnesty International and I was getting ready to go to lunch and I heard him on the radio. I turned on the radio, I said, oh, let me turn on the radio, they had a talk program. And that was, he was speaking. And then I thought, oh, I should go hear this person because I was looking for some type of spiritual truth. And I said, oh, I should go hear this person. So then from there was, you know, history. He was preaching at, he was giving lectures at Howard University. So I went there. So to come back to Srila Prabhupada and his purport, so, you know, my realization, you know, as I was reading it, because Prabhupada's purports are so, so profound. I find his purports very profound. You know, now that I'm out of, a little bit out of my illusion. So he's saying that fools and rascals in the material world plan so gorgeously for bodily comfort without knowing that such arrangements, even if successful, are only Maya. And there's some verses in the Bhagavad Gita I'd like to share in terms of how we cannot, we're given a certain body because we had certain desires in our previous life. So Krishna helps us to fulfill those desires. And even though we think we're free and we have a mind independence, but we're not free. Everything is controlled. Our body is completely controlled by the three modes of material nature. So in, I'll just read several, there's three that I want to read. One is, and this helps me too, when I look up the verses, then I remember the verses when I'm looking them up. 250, I came right to it, 250. Okay, this one is 650 says, a man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad actions even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work. Since time immemorial, each living entity has accumulated the various reactions of his good and bad work. As such, he is continuously ignorant of his real constitutional position. One's ignorance can be removed by the instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, which teaches one to surrender unto Lord Krishna in all respects and become liberated from the chained victimization of action and reaction, birth after birth. Arjuna is therefore advised to act in Krishna consciousness, the purifying process of resultant action. So even if we're we're doing some pious activity or negative activity, those activities bind us, because I remember when I was at the temple, one person was asking, I'm living now in Hillsboro, and one person was asking, well, I'm a good person and I do pious works, so doesn't that count for anything? And so it's explained that yes, you can do pious activities and you can get the results of those pious activities. Maybe you'll go to the heavenly planets, whatever, but still you have to come back down, because then once you exhaust all those pious credits, then you have to start getting the reaction from your negative activity. And the only way to counteract that is to dovetail all your activities into Krishna consciousness. So then we'll go to another one. I'll just read the translations. The steadily devoted soul attains unadulterated peace because he offers the result of all activities to me. Whereas a person who is not in union with the divine, who is greedy for the fruits of his labor, becomes entangled. The difference between a person in Krishna consciousness and a person in bodily consciousness is that the former is attached to Krishna, whereas the latter is attached to the results of his activities. The person who is attached to Krishna and works for him only is certainly a liberated person, and he has no anxiety over the result of his work. In the Bhagavatam, the cause of anxiety over the result of an activity is explained as being one's functioning in the conception of duality, that is, without knowledge of the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead. In Krishna consciousness, there is no duality. All that exists is a product of Krishna's energy, and Krishna is all good. Therefore, activities in Krishna consciousness are on the absolute plane. They are transcendental and have no material effect. And one thing I thought about when I read this is that all activities are on the absolute plane. So that means that whether you're worshiping the deers, your pujari, or whether you're sweeping the floor, whether you're cooking, or whether you're washing the pots, or whether you're cleaning the stove, whatever activity you do is on the absolute plane. So it doesn't matter what position you're holding, as long as you're doing some service for Krishna. It's not that because you're a pujari because that's not, that type of thinking is on the material platform. So whatever we can offer Krishna is absolute, and he's accepting. Depending on also the sincere. We're all sincere. Everybody who's coming to Krishna consciousness is sincere. So he accepts that. Therefore, activities in Krishna consciousness are on the absolute plane. They are transcendental and have no material effect. One is therefore filled with peace in Krishna consciousness. But one who is entangled in profit calculation for sense gratification cannot have that peace. This is the secret of Krishna consciousness. Realization that there's no existence besides Krishna is the platform of peace and fearlessness. The translation is, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act. So this goes to the fact that we're forced to act by the modes of material nature. We don't have any control. We're residing in the body, but we're acted upon by the three modes of material nature. Nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of material nature. The living entity, as will be explained in the seventh chapter, is one of the energies or natures of the Supreme Lord, but is distinct from matter, which is another nature called inferior of the Lord. Somehow, the superior nature, the living entity, has been in contact with material nature since time immemorial. The temporary body or material dwelling place, which he obtains, is the cause of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as the living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he is in the city of body, he appears to be the master of it, but actually he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. As I was reading this, I was remembering that after I left Yidanagri, I was feeling like very distressed about not being in Yidanagri and with Radha-Damodar. One day I was looking at a DVD. I was watching DVDs about Srila Prabhupada. Because whenever I go to either the Srila Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita or something about Srila Prabhupada, that's the only way to raise my consciousness out of whatever distress I think I'm feeling. So this DVD was about the first festival they had in Mayapur. They had just finished building the Chantogaya Mandir. And that was the only building there, actually. But I think on the side, I saw they were starting the long building. And it was so, I wasn't there, but the feeling I got was how ecstatic those devotees were. They were waiting for Srila Prabhupada to come. And they were all gathered around, and they had the flags they were holding up. And they were in kirtan, so joyful, looking down the road, waiting for Srila Prabhupada to come. And then the one scene I remember is they were crossing the Jalangi on the boat. You know, they have to cross to go over to Navadvip. And as I was thinking about, you know, my situation and what am I going to do now, and as they were getting the boat, the boats were coming across the river, and then one boat came, and my Gurudev was sitting in the front of the boat, and he had Harinam Chatter wrapped around his head. He was real young then, and he was rowing the boat. Like, he was so joyful. He was rowing the boat. He was in the front of the bow. And then I thought, thank you, Gurudev. It was a message, just stay in the boat. You know, no problem. Just stay in the boat that I'm rowing. You know, and that's the message I picked up. So when I read this, that came back to me, and I was so happy after that. I was totally like, yes, you know, because the messages come. You know, so I was totally ecstatic about, yeah, just stay in the boat. He's rowing the boat, just stay in the boat, chant your rounds, do your sadhana. You know, just stay fixed at the lotus feet of the guru. And then, okay, I'll read one more, just 13:29. Anybody have any additions or questions or experiences they'd like to share before I go on?
I had something about when you got the Back to Godhead. Oh, did you ever pay for you the Back to Godhead?
I don't remember what I did. It's funny, I don't remember. All I remember is holding it. I'm sure they asked for a donation. I think maybe I gave them 50 cents or something. It was like that. I think they weren't charging very much.
No.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was digging in.
Digging a quarter.
Yeah, I think it was, I think it was 50 cents that I gave them for the book. You know, but it's funny that aspect of the book stayed in my mind. You know, there's something about it that stayed in my mind.
It says that just by touching, you know, on Sankirtan when he used to go, he said, let people that touch the book, sees a book, opens a page, and then even that, you know, helps.
Yeah, it made
so
an impact.
You paid for it, so that started there.
Made an impact on my consciousness somehow, you know, even though it didn't fructify. It took a long time to fructify. And even then, Because actually I was on the Bali platform. Because I was into a lot of social movements, so I was definitely on the Bali platform. So Krishna planted that seed. And then as I was relating to Sudevi, since we've been together, I didn't know when I met Bhakti Tidmaraj, Srila Krishnapada at the time, that it was the Hare Krishna movement at all. I had no idea. None. Because I was on I was into cultural nationalism, if you know what that is, you know. Well, it's during that time, there was so many, I'm feeling like really old now, but during that time, there were so many different groups. You know, you had the hippie groups, you had the black nationalists, it was a time of social upheaval. If you were, you know, you knew during that, you were in that time that you know that it was so much social upheaval going on at the time. It was Kent University, there was the Black Panther Party, there was different levels of social upheaval that was happening in the society. You know, the FBI and the CIA, there was so much stuff going on. So I was definitely into black cultural nationalism. So for me, I was on the Bali platform. So when I went to Washington, and so Krishna was thinking, okay, how can I bring her? You know, because, so then when I met him, he wore African clothing. Because he was dealing with the mentality of those two people he was, you know, preaching to. Even though I know he didn't change the philosophy, and I know he chanted. But somehow we were covered. I also told Sudevi that coming to the Institute for the first time, I never saw the deities. He had Gaudiya Thai there, but I never saw them. All I saw was a light coming out of this black box, but I couldn't actually see the deities at all. And I went to, and I was just hanging out. I wasn't very serious. I was just kind of hanging out. And would go with him to different locations. He would go preach. He went to Cleveland University. But I remember being at Cleveland University when he was preaching. He was singing Hare Krishna. He was chanting Hare Krishna. But it didn't penetrate my mind at all, not even once. Somehow, though, as we went along,
so
something
finally
happened.
Figured it out.
I did something, finally registered. But by then it was too late. He had already cast the net, and he had already caught us. So we couldn't escape.
He knew how to do it.
He knew. He was expert. Yeah. He was expert. He knew how to do it.
Prabhupada says, you go in like a needle, come out like a plow.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. You know, I think that's exactly what happened. We were just sitting there, listening to him lecture, and after some time, he would engage us in a little service. His first service was for me was to sew. I sewed outfits for him, but they were African outfits. And I sewed, you know, like, and then after a while, I started cooking for the deities. And then it just rolled along. And after that, next thing I knew, I was being initiated. So I was like, okay. You know, but once you recognize the absolute truth, because he had us write a paper about why didn't we want to be initiated. We had to write an essay. That meant we had to read, you know, and figure out, you know, like, because he wanted to see where we were at before he initiated us. So I was saying that once you recognize the truth, you can't escape. Where else is there to go? There's nowhere else to go. You recognize the truth. So you're like, this is what I was looking for, so let me just accept. You know, there's nothing else to do. You have to accept. So that was what happened. I have to tell one more pastime before I read on. I used to sit in the Institute and Maharaj would come down the steps. I never bowed. I saw everybody bowing, but I never bowed. And I would just sit there. I was like, actually, I felt like I was like a stone almost. I'd had so many experiences in the material world, negative, that I was totally like jaded. So when he came down, I would just sit there. You know, and it's not that I didn't appreciate him, but whatever the process was, I wasn't doing it. So then after I had made that African outfit for him, he came in my dream. He came in my dream and he told me, he was sitting in the chair and he had on the outfit I made him, and he came in my dream and he told me the reason why we bow to the spiritual master. So after that, I was like, okay. Bow down, mister. So after that, you know, I started bowing. So I'll read one more before I stop. I wanted to read 13. It's Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. It's 13. Well, this has to do with the mind, how the mind concocts all these different ideas of what we want to do. So the translation is, one who sees the super soul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind. Thus he approaches the transcendental destination. The living entity, by accepting his material existence, has become situated differently than in his spiritual existence. But if one understands that the Supreme is situated in its Paramatma manifestation everywhere, that is, if one can see the presence of the Supreme Person of Godhead in every living being, he does not degrade himself by a destructive mentality, and he therefore gradually advances to the spiritual world. The mind is generally addicted to sense-gratifying processes, but when the mind turns to the Super Soul, one becomes advanced in spiritual understanding. And also I don't think that's the one. I think I wanted to read text 30. The one, Prakritiyaiva Chakarmani Kriyamanani Savasahaya Pashati Tatatmanam Akartaram Sapashati. One who sees that all activities are performed by the body, which is created of material nature, and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees. This is short. This body is made by material nature under the direction of the super soul, and whatever activities are going on in respect to one's body are not his doing. Whatever one is supposed to do, either for happiness or for distress, one is forced to do because of the bodily constitution. The self, however, is outside all these bodily activities. This body is given according to one's past desires. To fulfill desires, one is given the body, with which he acts accordingly. Practically speaking, the body is a machine designed by the Supreme Lord to fulfill desires. Because of desires, one is put into difficult circumstances to suffer or to enjoy. This transcendental vision of the living entity, when developed, makes one separate from bodily activities. One who has such a vision is an actual seer. So we know I'm sure everybody's familiar with this verse. Daivehe Eshagunamaya Mama Maya Dharatya Yamam Eva Ye Papadyante Mayam Etam Turantite. So these material energy is difficult to overcome. But only one who is surrendered to Krishna can overcome. So throughout the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about how we're not the body and how the activities we are doing, you know, outside of Krishna consciousness, just keeps us coming into this material world, birth after birth, accepting another body, fulfilling whatever desires we have, you know. So the miseries we experience, like birth, death, old age, and disease, and I'm really seeing now how the body is now becomes, you become betrayed by the body. We're so attached to the body, but you start having all these aches and pains, and things start happening, and you see, yes, this is what the body does. It starts deteriorating, just like any machine. So the only thing to do is to completely absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness, and especially when everybody, no matter who is, because death is, like Prabhupada said, is 100%. Everybody's dying or going to die. But If you're still alive, you know, 60, 70, then you start preparing for your departure. And actually, I'm always telling the devotees, my friends, that we don't want to go shopping, and I'm thinking, why do we need to go shopping? You know, even though I do go, it's like, I'm deteriorating and I'm accumulating. That doesn't make any sense. When you're deteriorating, you decrease. You minimize your needs. You don't like keep increasing, you know, like, and look at Sanat Goswami and Rupa Goswami. They had such high positions, but they gave up everything and they slept under trees and they slept a minimum. But, you know, so now at this stage of my life, it means cut it down. Don't keep accumulating, you know. And I'm thinking, I don't want anybody to come in after I'm leaving my body and have to clean out my apartment and wonder what to do with all the stuff. So that doesn't make any sense. So I'm gradually trying to decrease. No collecting. There's no collecting. This is the dwindling time. No, but the spirit soul, you increase the activity of the spirit soul because that's the natural position of the soul. So you increase your spiritual activities, you increase your reading, you increase your chanting, and you only eat prasadam to make your spirit soul come up stronger as the body is deteriorating. That's what you do. You increase the spirit soul, you increase the attachment to Krishna. Okay, I'll end here. Thank you. Anybody have any additions, corrections?
Well, I'd just like to add something. Just you mentioned about the Goswami sleeping under a tree. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking how they slept under different trees every day. And one time on a morning walk, devotees, Prabhupada, and Prabhupada stops and looks at all this bird droppings all over. And Prabhupada said, what does this mean? And the devotees are trying to figure out like some kind of a pattern, sign. The devotees couldn't figure out. He says it means that even the birds are attached to their home. You know, so and the Goswamis were not even, they slept under different trees, but the birds even stay in the same tree and live there and make it permanent residence.
Yeah, trying to make it comfortable. One of the reasons I was telling also to David that I'm going around is because when I'm at home, I start feeling like I'm too comfortable. Rather than that, I arranged a really nice place, no problem, you know, everything's there, everything I need, but when I'm there too long, I start feeling like, this is too comfortable. I need to go.
Yeah. That's what we all should, when preaching to devotees at like these meetings that we have, President's meetings coming up next week, a lot of the theme is to get out of your comfort zone.
Yes.
Because that's what you have to do to surrender to Krishna. You just got a nice situation and you stick with it and you're doing a little and it's nice, but you really should get out of your comfort zone, take some risk, do some more for Krishna.
Yeah. Yes, I have such a realization of that too. When I'm like, I gotta go. You know, I have to. Even given class, I moved to give class. I was thinking, I don't think I'm gonna give class. And then I was thinking, okay, Guru Maharaj, let me displease you and please move to and give class. So thank you so much.
Thank you
so much.